ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, revelations the Bondi gunman recently underwent military-style training in the Philippines. Also, more stories emerge of heroism in the face of the gunfire. And the murders of Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle shock movie lovers around the world.
He has made some of your favourite films, my favourite films, everyone's favourite films. There was a time there in the 80s and 90s when he had this almost perfect run of movies.
First this evening, in the aftermath of the Bondi terror attack, governments and police are under pressure to explain what they've done to counter anti-Semitism and control gun ownership in Australia. At a high-pressure media conference today, the Prime Minister defended his government's work to crack down on anti-Jewish hate, and the New South Wales Premier angrily dismissed suggestions the state's police force was ill-prepared for Sunday's attack. Alison Chow begins our coverage from Bondi Beach.
As the mountain of floral tributes grows, mourners sing and pray together in Hebrew, led by Rabbi Yossi Friedman.
As I shared before, we're one. You know, it doesn't matter the colour of our skin, the nature of our beliefs or our faith backgrounds. We're human beings.
At Bondi Pavilion, near the site of the attack, there's a sweet smell of flowers and candles piercing through the heaviness in the air. Yeah. And the smell of curry.
Hey, mate. How you going? Would you like a banana or a rice and curry?
Sikh leader Amar Singh is here with Turbans for Australia to help look after Jewish Australians and Bondi locals who've been shattered by Sunday's attack.
I think as an Australian, it's everyone's duty to come and morally support our wonderful Jewish community. And also, I mean, I lay a claim to Bondi. It's my beach as well. Nobody's got the right to come and do what they did here.
Many here are in tears, including the family of 10-year-old victim Matilda, as they visited the makeshift memorial. Many other Sydney-siders also came to Bondi to grieve.
Still feeling very saddened that people could do that to innocent people.
How does it make you feel to see all these people here today?
It's wonderful to have so much support.
Also in the crowd, 95-year-old Holocaust survivor Egon Sonnenschein.
I never expected to experience this in Australia after all this which I went through the Holocaust. This should have been nipped in the bud when it started. When I was on the opera house, on the steps, hate speeches. Australia has been a wonderful country and I love Australia. But the anti-Semitism, it's a scourge. I cannot believe that it's still happening today.
Israel's ambassador to Australia, Amir Maimon, also visited the memorial.
I hope that all necessary measures will be taken. Education, it's first and foremost because it's needed, enhanced security measures, even though on a personal basis, although I believe it's needed, it's not the answer.
The federal government is flagging a tightening of gun laws, but former Prime Minister John Howard says that's a big attempt at diversion from what he describes as the government's failure to tackle anti-Semitism.
There's little doubt that since October the 7th, 2023, not enough has been done by those who command authority and respect in our society to prevent, cauterise and denounce the spread of anti-Semitism. And I hope that this terrible event will be a wake-up call to those who've been asleep at the wheel.
But Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has defended his government's record in tackling anti-Semitism.
We have passed legislation to outlaw hate speech, the first government to do so, to put in place those laws as part of our response to anti-Semitism. We have taken the report from the Anti-Semitism Envoy and what we are doing is busy implementing it.
In a fiery press conference today, the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns also launched a passionate defence of his state's police force in the face of questions from some reporters about whether they were too slow to kill or apprehend the shooters.
The New South Wales Police acted with bravery and integrity. They didn't take a backward step. They engaged the gunman on the footbridge with handguns. Now, there are two officers in critical care in New South Wales hospitals at the moment. They weren't shot in the back as they were running away. They were shot in the front. I'm sorry to be graphic about it, but if there's any suggestion that New South Wales Police didn't live up to their responsibilities to the people of this state, it should be rejected, because it's not consistent with the facts.
At the same press conference, the Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police, Chrissy Barrett, confirmed the two shooters appear to have been motivated by extremism.
Early indications point to a terrorist attack inspired by Islamic State, allegedly committed by a father and son. There is no evidence to suggest other individuals were involved in this attack. However, we caution that this could change given it is early in our investigation.
Two ISIS flags were found in the car used by the men.
Alison Chow reporting. The ABC has revealed today that the Bondi gunman, Sajidan Naveed Akram, recently travelled to the Philippines to receive what is being called military-style training. Sean Rubenstein-Dunlop is a reporter with the ABC's investigations team. Sean, what can you tell us about this training the Akrams underwent in the Philippines?
Well, our counterterrorism sources have told us that Naveed and Sajid Akram, the son and father who opened fire on the Hanukkah celebrations at Bondi Beach on Sunday, travelled in the month before to the Philippines. They left in early November on a flight to Manila, the Philippines capital. And our sources tell us that they then journeyed south to the southern Philippines and participated in what we've been told was military style training. They were in the Philippines until late November, returned to Australia just weeks before opening fire on Bondi Beach last Sunday.
Is much known about who runs these training camps in the Philippines?
Look, we know that in the southern Philippines, particularly in the area of South Mindanao, that has been a hotspot for militant groups since the late 1990s who moved over from the Afghanistan-Pakistan border and set up militant training camps there. We know that Australian terrorists in the past have travelled to those areas and in other cases have been stopped trying to make their way over there. So certainly an area of interest for Australian Islamic State members for some time. We don't know specifically who they were training with at this time or the exact location of where these two men were, but these are details which we expect will emerge in the coming days.
And what's known, Sean, about what led up to this trip to the Philippines in terms of the men's links with groups perhaps in Sydney?
Well, we've been examining the Akram's links to members of a pro-Islamic State network in Australia. We know that Naveed Akram, the younger man, was a follower of a notorious radical jihadist cleric called Wissam Haddad, a preacher who has been on ASIO's radar for most of his adult life, who listeners might know of because he's been reported on extensively over the years as an influence on young followers who have turned to the jihad. Now, listeners might also remember that Wissam Haddad was sued and found by the federal court earlier this year to have breached racial discrimination laws with anti-Semitic lectures. He has preached a violent anti-Semitic message in lectures, for example, quoting religious passages about the killing of Jews. We're told that Naveed Akram was a follower of Wissam Haddad, attended his radical prayer centre in the the suburb of Bankstown, Al Medina Dawa Centre, and was active in his Dawa Van street preaching group. And we're told as well by our sources that ASIO has picked up Naveed Akram's connections to convicted terrorists associated with that cleric.
You were at the media conference today in Sydney. It was fronted by the Prime Minister, the New South Wales Premier, the heads of the Federal Police and New South Wales Police. They were bombarded with questions. What are the questions you think they still need to answer?
Yeah, look, such a feisty press conference, and they were clearly under a lot of pressure. I imagine that pressure is going to continue to rise. For me, the questions are, well, we know that ASIO investigated Naveed Akram in 2019. Given his long-standing connections to extremists in an Islamic State network, why were he and his father not on any watch list in the lead-up to the attack on Sunday? Why was his father, Sajid Akram, allowed to obtain a gun licence in 2023 and amass the 6 guns that were used by these two in the shooting? Was there any security alert that was triggered when these two travelled to the Philippines? If not, should they have been on some sort of border monitoring list? Did security agencies know about this travel? And more broadly, have Australian authorities dropped the ball on the resurgence of Islamic State in Australia, a group that has been re-energising itself here, according to our investigations, in recent years? Now, these, I think, are all questions that will be asked in the days, months, maybe even years ahead.
Sean Rubenstein Dunlop is a reporter with the ABC's investigations team. And immigration officials in the Philippines have this evening confirmed that the gunmen, the Akrams, spent most of November in that country. They say that Sajid Akram entered the country on an Indian passport, while his son Naveed Akram entered on an Australian passport. The Bondi massacre has devastated Australians and left many of us worrying about the nation's values and community safety. But as is the case at so many barbaric events, some people at Bondi on Sunday put their own safety at risk to protect others, and their bravery can give us hope at this dark time. Miwa Bloomer has the story.
Amid an act of hatred, heroes have emerged. And today, there are new details about the actions some people took. Dashcam footage from a car driving past shows a man and a woman displaying incredible bravery. The video shows a man in a purple shirt fighting one of the gunmen next to a parked car before they both fall to the ground. The ABC has not yet verified the details. But a Bondi local who wishes to remain anonymous was driving past with her husband and 2 young children in the car and saw the incident unfold.
When I heard what was happening, I jumped in the back of my car. And when I looked up, I saw what is now known as the man in the purple shirt. He attacked the dad of the terrorist and attacked him. So what I was able to see was him jumping on him and the dad falling backwards. My husband saw him take the rifle from him. I didn't see that.
She wants the world to know the act of heroism she saw.
Just want Australia to know that he was a hero. He could have gone the opposite way like the rest of the people did, but he went to that man directly knowing that there were shots fired, and he was a hero. His family needs to know that he was such a brave man.
In another act of courage, footage showing 62-year-old Reuven Morrison throwing bricks at one of the gunmen has captured the attention of many. Mr. Morrison, a Jewish man, was then shot by the attackers and died at the scene. His daughter, Shayna Gutnick, told CBS News he died a hero.
If there was one way for him to go on this earth, it would be fighting a terrorist. He went down fighting, protecting the people he loved the most.
She says her father was concerned about the rise in anti-Semitism in Australia.
I don't know how to live in a world without him.
And says the Australian government is to blame. While people fought the gunmen directly during the attack, others protected strangers and loved ones by putting their own bodies on the line.
I got you.
Jessica Rosen was running away from the attack when she noticed a young girl screaming. She used her body to shield the girl and tried to comfort her while the shooters continued their onslaught.
Say hi.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, we can hide baby girl.
The Guardian reports Jessica Rosen stayed with the young girl until her dad came. The most well-known hero to emerge from this terrorist attack is 43-year-old Ahmed Al-Ahmed. Footage, which has now gone viral, shows the Syrian-born Australian sneaking up on the gunman and successfully disarming him.
Oh! Oh, no, no.
Ahmed Al-Ahmed was shot multiple times and is currently in hospital. And today, he received a visit from the Prime Minister.
Very strong. Thank you very much. I was strong. Thank you. Your courage is inspiring.
Thank you very much.
Footage of the global hero speaking from his hospital bed has also emerged on TRT World.
I appreciate the efforts of everyone. May Allah reward you and grant you well-being. God willing, we will return to you with joy.
A fundraiser for Ahmed Al-Ahmed has also raised more than $2 million.
Thank goodness for those brave people. That report from Miwa Bloomer and Tony Ibrahim. Gun law experts have differing views on what can be done to improve the nation's firearms laws. The Prime Minister and state and territory leaders have agreed to make changes after the Bondi atrocity. Among the proposals are stricter licensing regimes and restrictions on the number of weapons a person can own. A national firearms register was recommended after the 1996 Port Arthur massacre, but it's yet to be introduced. And some experts believe it'll be difficult to finally set it up unless authorities get a better idea of just how many guns are in the country. Rachel Mealy has more.
New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon says the firearms that were used in Sunday's attack were attached to a licence held by the older shooter, Sajid Akram. But that licence wasn't issued in 2015, as he'd previously stated.
I'm advised that he did not get a photo taken as required by that licence, and the application lapsed in 2016. A second category AB licence was applied for Mr. Akram in 2020. That licence was recommended for issue and issued in 2023. He was licensed to hold a Category AB licence, and the firearms that we have seized were attached to that licence appropriately.
New South Wales Police say Sajid Akram legally owned six firearms and belonged to a recreational gun club. At yesterday's National Cabinet, the states, territories and Commonwealth discussed potential changes to gun laws, among them restricting the number of firearms an individual can own and increasing the use of criminal intelligence when conducting firearms licensing checks. Nick Jensen-Jones is a weapons expert and the director of Armament Research Services. He says the shooters used two straight-pull shotguns, which are commonly owned by sporting shooters.
These actions are not new, but have gained popularity in recent years because they fit quite well within the restrictive firearms laws of Australia. So they offer a relatively fast firing capability without some of the legal complexities attached to more orthodox, more modern systems.
He says any national discussion about strengthening gun laws needs to include improved follow-up checks after a gun licence has been issued.
We already have very robust mechanisms in place for the law enforcement to seize firearms, you know, in cases of domestic abuse or in cases where there are suspected criminal ties. It appears those weren't exercised in this case, obviously. So I think my concern is more about the intelligence picture that led up to decision to not take the firearms or lack of awareness about those firearms. And then also the intervention strategies of the licensing agency as well.
David Bright is Professor of Criminology at Deakin University. He says gun law reform needs to start with an understanding of how many weapons are currently in Australia, and the states and territories need to share that information between them.
There needs to be a much better way of gathering and holding and sharing information about, firstly, legal firearms that are held by licensed firearm owners. That's the first thing. And the National Firearms Register is part of that solution, but that is still a few years off at this stage. I know there have been some plans to try to fast track that. So collecting and sharing information about licensed firearms at the moment, it is very difficult to get any kind of clear sense about numbers.
Also under the microscope are rules about the importation of weapons. Professor Bright says the advent of 3D printed firearms has made detection more difficult.
3D printed firearms changes the landscape because it limits the extent to which regular restrictions on importation and purchasing of firearms can be implemented by a government, because these kinds of firearms can be printed in a very covert way.
Professor David Bright from Deakin University. Rachel Mealy reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, you can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Hollywood stars and movie fans around the world have been stunned by the murders of legendary film director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle. Their son Nick has been arrested and is suspected of killing them in their home in the wealthy LA suburb of Brentwood. The son of famous actor and comedian Carl Reiner, Rob started acting on TV in the 1960s and went on to direct films like When Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me, This Is Spinal Tap, and A Few Good Men. Aside from filmmaking, Rob Reiner was a prominent supporter of the Democratic Party and was even considered a possible candidate for governor of California in the early 2000s. While Democratic presidents Clinton, Obama and Biden have all paid tribute to the filmmaker, the current president, Donald Trump, has outraged many by calling him a deranged person. Julia Bergen has this update on the murder investigation and a reminder of Rob Reiner's work, which entertained so many of us.
From Television City in Hollywood.
By the way Glenn Miller played.
It was the 1970s when Rob Reiner first captured the attention of audiences.
Guys like us, we had it made.
An actor in the sitcom All in the Family. He played Mike Stivic, alongside the character's father-in-law, Archie Bunker.
Don't you know that the whole world puts on a sock and a sock and a shoe and a shoe?
I like to take care of one foot at a time.
The role in All the Family won him 2 Emmys and kickstarted his career as a director and producer.
He has made some of your favourite films, my favourite films, everyone's favourite films.
That's film critic Wenley Ma.
There was a time there in the 80s and 90s when he had this almost perfect run of movies that would go on to be absolute classics.
There was The Princess Bride.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
When Harry Met Sally.
What's the matter with me?
Nothing.
I'm difficult.
You're challenging.
I'm too structured. I'm completely closed off.
But in a good way.
A Few Good Men.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall.
Right up until his death, Rob Reiner was directing and acting. That came to a tragic end over the weekend when he and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, were both found dead in their home. United States authorities say their son Nick, one of 4 children, is responsible. Jim McDonnell is the chief of the Los Angeles Police Department.
We have our robbery homicide division handling the investigation. They worked throughout the night on this case and were able to take into custody Nick Reiner, a suspect in this case.
The double homicide has had a seismic impact. Rob Reiner's fame had transcended the film industry, and in his later years, he turned to politics. He was a liberal activist, particularly promoting marriage equality, and a supporter of successive Democratic presidential candidates, including John Kerry, Al Gore, and Hillary Clinton. He was also a vocal critic of Trump.
Donald Trump is the single most unqualified human being to ever assume the presidency of the United States.
Following Rob Reiner's death, U.S. President Donald Trump openly mocked him.
Well, I wasn't a fan of his at all. He was a deranged person as far as Trump is concerned. He said he knew it was false. In fact, it's the exact opposite, that I was a friend of Russia, controlled by Russia. You know, it was the Russia hoax. He was one of the people behind it. I think he hurt himself in career-wise.
Speaking to the BBC, family friend of the Reiners, Chris Perry, says these comments are cruel and petty.
I don't
think it's ever the right time to make a family tragedy about yourself. And so I think it's a really inappropriate comment to make when you know that a family has been destroyed.
Chris Perry says Rob Reiner and his wife were generous people, and her heart breaks for their family.
Knowing them all, I can't help but think about all three children and what this means for their lives and what they've lost. My heart is broken for all three of them.
Chris Perry is a friend of the Reiner family. Julia Bergen with that report and When Harry Met Sally, one of my all-time favourites. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Andy Park, filling in for Sam Hawley on ABC News Daily. It was an act of terrorism that Jewish leaders long feared. So, in the depths of their sorrow, how are they coping? And what are they asking for? Today, Rabbi Mendel Castell from support group Jewish House, whose own brother-in-law, Rabbi Eli Schlanger, was killed in the attack. And I ask Federal Sydney Liberal Member of Parliament, Julian Lisa, where Australians, outraged at this attack, should direct their anger. Look for ABC News Daily on the ABC Listen app.